97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
He set foot in America one fine October day. Sailing into Baltimore, well, everything's okay. He buttons on the jacket. Shining like the brand new diamonds, glistening in the sunlight, blistering my eyes. When you said that you loved me, I knew it wasn't true. I've 100 unread messages, but not a single.
Should I do this from the top of the show? Should I do that? No? I think I'm going to. I'm talking to nobody here because I'm my own producer. I'm talking into a mirror is what I'm doing. Welcome to Wiggins America. I'm asking my producer, me, whether I should talk about Juneteenth to top the show. You know, there's been some Supreme Court decisions yesterday. I would say that's probably the bigger news of the week. But, you know, culturally, Juneteenth has been a topic of discussion. Why? Because Juneteenth is now a federal holiday for the first time in America's history, starting Wednesday. And a lot of people have a lot of thoughts about it. Now, here's how I spent Juneteenth. If you listen to the station, we now, as a company, get that day off. And so nobody was here. We played some best ofs. We had some fill-in hosts, some things like that. I actually took off Tuesday as well and drove to Holiday World and went to Santa Claus, Indiana with my kids. I love theme parks. I absolutely love them. I'm going to try to go to Silver Dollar City before the summer's over. In October, I'm planning a trip with my son, my youngest son, to California just to go to Legoland and Knott's Berry Farm and Universal Studios California. We're not doing Disneyland. I figured that was kind of its own trip, and we're just doing like a weekend quick thing. And part of the reason we're going to California is because they don't celebrate Columbus Day now. So, you know, we're going to go to parks on a day where they don't have off of school, but that we do. So a little strategy there, and it all does play into politics. Having gone to Holiday World, it was a lot busier on a Tuesday in early June than it should have been. And my guess is that now, because of Juneteenth, and a lot of people here at this station, a lot of people elsewhere, have taken this week off, at least part of the week, maybe the first half or the second half since it fell on a Wednesday, and you make it a very, very long weekend and a pretty nice vacation and only have to take 2 days of vacation to do it. So I think a lot of people did that, and my experience at the park there was that it was a lot more crowded than I was expecting, which kind of stunk, but their water park is first class. I mean, Holiday World, for whatever reason, doesn't get enough credit for having maybe the best water park in the country. I kid you not. But I say all this because Juneteenth, right? So we'll have this discussion a little bit here about Juneteenth. I know a lot of people have really high emotions about this holiday. And some people are like, why weren't we celebrating this for years? Other people are like, why did we suddenly start celebrating this? I think I understand. Because on its face, you know, on Wednesday, I'm thinking about this as I'm driving home from Holiday World. Like, why haven't we celebrated this? Because it is a good holiday. You know, this. And a lot of people said, why haven't we been celebrating the Emancipation Proclamation instead of Juneteenth? Well, we have. It's just that that took effect on January 1st, and I should have looked up the year. But that was a January 1st holiday. Therefore, it kind of gets overshadowed by New Year's, of course. So, like, you do celebrate it in a sense. Like, it's there, and it always has been. But it's January 1st. Juneteenth is literally the end of slavery in the United States. So when you talk about it in pure fact, I do support celebrating something like that. The problem is, now let me put that aside and say, while I do support it, The problem is everything else surrounding it. Like all the criticisms that people have about why we're celebrating it, I don't know about all of them, but I would say a lot of them are very, very valid, that this isn't a pure celebration. This isn't something that we decided in 1973 that, yeah, you know what, let's celebrate the bicentennial and celebrate something that's very good for America. This was something that in the wake of George Floyd and people burning down the country over race riot stuff, and half of it wasn't, it was like Antifa stuff. In the wake of that, a bunch of Democrat politicians decided that they were going to celebrate Juneteenth. And most of us had never heard the word before. I mean, I personally, and maybe this is just me, although I don't think it is, I had never heard Juneteenth. And I remember the first time hearing the word, thinking that somebody had messed up saying it, like they meant to say June 13th or June 19th is ultimately what it was. But I was like, why did you say it that way? And then they said it again, and I thought, they seem to be saying this intentionally. That's how naive I was to the celebration. Now, the fact is, it was celebrated in Texas for many, many years, but it was like really small pockets of Texas were the only places that knew about this holiday. So, unfortunately, what could have been a very uniquely American holiday has become a political wedge that basically Democrats have used to say, well, you know, it seems to me like they said, well, this is something that we should force now because of George Floyd. And that's where I go, dang it, this sucks. I mean, I hate that that's the way that this came about. And it is like when people go, look, this wasn't even a holiday a couple minutes ago. So I get it. And maybe at some point, obviously things have always had political ties. It's not as if this is the first time a decision's ever been made with heavy political baggage to it. But it just seems like good things shouldn't have these things tied to them, because I really do think this is something that is worth acknowledging that we never have before. But gosh, there's just so much baggage added to it and the divisiveness that it obviously was birthed out of. Anyway, I'll give it a break. Let me know what you think. At Radio Wiggins, I'd love to know your thoughts, and I'll be monitoring that this weekend, even if I don't get to it right away. Hey, Old Roy is coming in. He is fresh off a trip from Italy. Just a reminder, we are doing a one-hour show for the time being. That has been my choice simply because of workload. I can't really keep up being my own producer and doing a two-hour show. For a little while, we're going to do a one-hour show, see how it goes. And Old Roy will be a part of that next. Got a great guest planned for next weekend, too. Hopefully, I'll get to tease that before the end of the show. Has to do with the movie Sound of Freedom. While I'm teasing it, I mean, I might as well just tell you, he's the guy the movie's based off of. We're going to have him on next week. So get the podcast if you can't listen. Stick around. More Wiggins America ahead. Old Roy is here, back from Italy. Thanks for coming back a little early.
Yeah. I did just for you.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
If you hadn't have been here, yeah, it was a couple days early, you wouldn't have been on the show this week. So
yeah.
The Italy trip, is that an annual thing now?
Kind of seems like it. It's kind of a nice summer break.
It's funny for you because you're so Irish that you made I thought you were making pilgrimage to Ireland every year, like that was your goal.
Well,
but it's become Italy.
Well, the goal in retirement is, it'll be trip to Ireland, detour to Sicily, and then back home, and then just keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're not going to go to France ever. You're just going to skip right over.
Not interested in France.
Okay. All right. Did you see that Stonehenge was vandalized? Not that that's Ireland, but that's in that area.
I did not know that.
Yeah, vandalized. They threw orange paint onto Stonehenge. I think they're going to be able to get it off, and it'll be okay. But it was to protest oil.
Well, so, that makes sense.
So do you think that they've stopped oil?
I'm sure oil is probably just like, no, let's call it a day.
Yeah. Did you see the Jerry Seinfeld thing that was similar?
No.
So somebody at a Seinfeld show stood up to yell about Palestine at Seinfeld. And he was so good at it, he just starts going, you know what? I did not understand your point until now. And he's going, I think the bet you've figured this thing out. And he's doing the typical Seinfeld voice. And he's like, the way to do this is to travel 3,000 miles from the point of conflict and yell at a comedian from the audience. And I, all the solutions that I've been seeking are here. And now we've together in this theater solved it. Like, it was great. The protests to me are they've got to just be paid for by nut jobs and way up high liberals and Soros and whoever. You know, it's not just him. There's other groups that are doing this stuff.
Yeah. It's not groundswell.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I mean, I could see, like, when somebody runs up to Stonehenge or paints a big X across Mona Lisa or something, I could see them being just idiots, but I just don't get the sense that they're alone. It seems like they're part of this bigger thing that's just intended to get attention, and it works, like, we're talking about it, so it does work, but it doesn't sway anybody's mind. It's more like chaos for the purpose of chaos.
Yeah. No, exactly. And I don't think the majority of them even have an objective. I think there are, you know, paid protesters. That's what they do.
Yeah.
They just, hey, this is a chance to be an anarchist. I'm going to go do it because that's fun. And they don't even know what it is they're protesting. It's just...
Yeah, it's just like, I'm 20.
Yeah.
So... I got to change the world, and the only way I'm going to do it is through either starting a YouTube channel, or that takes a lot of work. I'm just going to go throw something at a famous piece of art.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about Europe, I didn't intend to go there, but I have this article that I did intend to bring up with you, maybe just in a different segment. Did you see in the last, it was really the last 2 weeks, how the elections in Europe went?
That was all going on. A lot of that was going on while I was there, but
okay. It
was all in Italian, so I don't know what they were saying.
So, were there Italian elections, or was it was other parts of Europe?
Well, the G7 thing was there.
Okay, yes. But this is not... I'm actually referring to the elections that were taking place across Europe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because you're right.
Yeah.
The G7 thing. And was it making Italian news that Biden had wandered off? I mean, I'm curious.
Well, they showed the video. I don't know. Again, I don't know what they're saying, but they showed the video of him looking at the parachuter while everybody else was facing the other way.
So they didn't shy away from it.
No.
Because if you were wanting to show, oh, everybody's in the same accord here, everybody's good, you wouldn't show that video.
No, I don't think they were doing it to highlight that. I think they were trying to highlight the lady who was... I guess the Italian
Prime Minister. Yeah, I can't remember her name.
They were it looked like they were just trying to prop her up.
Cuz she's apparently, is she popular in Italy?
Well, it's hard to say. Sicily kind of thinks of themselves as their own country to a certain extent, but except when it comes to soccer, then they're all for the
because she's
team.
Super conservative.
Yeah, no, I mean it was they just kept showing that footage of her shaking hands with everybody.
Oh, okay. So you don't know what they're saying. They're just showing the footage. So in the midst of all these elections, now here's what maybe you didn't know: Europe moved right in all of these elections. They call it a populist movement, which would be very similar to a Trump type thing,
mm-hmm.
where all these all these European countries voted for the conservative candidates. Now they would all, our media is calling them all far right candidates.
Yeah.
But they're conservative candidates who are running on, you know, an immigration policy, because they're dealing with the same thing there where immigration is just out of control,
mm-hmm.
and people feel like they're losing their specific culture. And this was an interesting take that I heard several people talking about in Europe, because European Union has kind of blurred those lines,
mm-hmm.
but everybody wants to keep, especially when you have your own language, you want to keep your culture.
Right.
And with mass immigration, that is hurting individual cultures' identities. and people are kind of fed up with it. Mm-hmm. They're not anti-immigrant. I think there's a big point to be made there. Most people, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but it seems like the vast majority of people aren't anti-immigration. They want to just have a distinct culture because that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why we can't talk about these things in these terms without somebody from the outside yelling racist. I mean, yes, they will. Somebody will yell racist at us here today, right. I'm sure. But the other reason that I brought that up is this article right here. While Europe is moving rightward, or conservative, I guess. I don't even know if you're moving rightward.
Mm.
This article says South Africa could be the first ever country to provide a no strings attached universal basic income. Now, I'm no history buff, but I don't think this would be the first time that's ever happened. I think that's called communism, and we have seen it happen.
Well, to a certain extent. I mean, it goes a step further than communism. You'll own nothing and like it. So it's everybody's the same, but it's not. There's not this. Well, we're just going to give you free money. So we're going to take all of it and then we'll distribute how we see fit. So I think the guaranteed income thing. California's talked about it for years. It's not a whole lot different than the debacle with minimum wage that's going on now that is going to end up, you know, bankrupting small business. So, I mean, if you try to do that to scale like that, where you're guaranteeing income, it doesn't make any sense. It never has. I don't know why it keeps popping up.
Well, it's a new buzzword. It sounds nice. Universal basic income sounds like, well, shoot, like if I'm Joe Schmo and I haven't thought about this at all, and somebody goes, you get a basic income given to you for nothing, I'm immediately like, that sounds great. It may not be the full income I need, but it sounds so good. And it's very, very popular among people who don't understand how these things work at all.
Well, to a certain extent, I mean, we tried it here post-COVID with the, you know, the extending unemployment benefits. And we've seen what's happened to the workforce by giving people a reason not to go to work. You're incentivizing them to not be productive because you can get paid more by doing less.
Mm-hmm.
And so the obvious outcome of that is a decimation of the workforce, and worse than that, I think culturally, just a lack of interest in productivity of any kind.
You know, it's one of the greatest gifts I think we've been given out of COVID is that bad policy has resulted in bad results fast.
Yeah.
Because bad policy typically takes a while, especially in a country as big, an economy as big as the United States. But that policy was so big and so bad that it's taught an entire generation what it looks like to have bad policy. That doesn't mean you've won everybody over, but you could easily point to that, just like you just did,
mm-hmm.
and say, I know, Gen Z, that sounds good to you, but consider what you just went through. And for their entire lives, they'll know that that's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it'll take something else in 40 years to bring that back around again, you know, assuming we're still the same type of country we are now. But over under, as we finish this segment out here, Roy, over under on how fast you think South Africa will collapse.
They're already on their way. So,
they are. Yeah, you're right.
So I think it'll go quicker if they implement that.
I'm going to say 6 to 7 years. And it really depends on what collapse means.
Yeah.
But I say it takes a couple years to really implement this. It takes a couple years for it to see its way through to people stop working. And then you're going to see some really bad results.
I'd say 4 to 5.
4 to 5. Okay, you're going under. All right, we'll be right back. I always appreciate when people write into the show. Not everything that you send me makes it onto the show. But on occasion it can. Dawn sent this in, Roy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a well, it says tough task of the day, which it is. List 3 positive things that Joe Biden or Kamala Harris have done. Can you list three? Let's not even say positive. Let's just say three things that they have accomplished legislatively.
Okay. So besides an amazing economy.
Yeah. Besides that.
And world peace.
Yep. You know, we do kind of have to put positive on it because you could just say, well, he's put a whole bunch of countries into war through no steady hand. He has opened up our border and he has spent $10 trillion. I mean, that you could say that.
Yeah.
Let's say positive. And you could here's a twist on it. Don, I don't know if you meant us to do this, but I'm taking the liberty here. The twist can be that it's positive even from their perspective. Not from ours, but from their perspective. What do they say that they've done positively in the last 4 years?
Well, they just lie.
Yeah, but what do they say that they've done, though?
Well, they're saying that it's a great economy.
Okay.
And that they've added more jobs and that everything is awesome.
Ding, there's one.
Everything is awesome? That's one?
That's one. Economy is awesome. That they've added X amount of jobs because they compare it to like the COVID dip,
yeah,
which is wonderful.
And they're only counting government jobs.
And yeah, that's another one. And they're counting unemployment, which is not the way to count these things anymore. You count people who are not even looking for a job anymore, which unemployment doesn't count.
Right.
But okay, so let's say that's one. Let's say that they're saying booming economy. There's one.
Boy. Their biggest thing right now is that they're not Trump.
Yes, but that's not an achievement, is it? Can we say that?
Probably not.
Okay. I mean, yes, that's a fact. That is their message. We're not Trump. We'll save democracy, maybe.
Well, they're not really telling us how they're going to save democracy. They're just saying that if we don't reelect them, then we'll lose democracy.
You have just said almost verbatim what Tyrus said.
Uh-oh.
Tyrus said whenever that he goes, I wish I were in the room when they would say any of these things, whether I'm interviewing them, I'm in the press pool, whatever, where they say, we will save democracy. He goes, I would just say, how? Or Trump will ruin democracy. I would ask how. Nobody is asking that question when they say those things. And they do interviews and say these things in interviews, and nobody is. And that's a simple question. Super, super easy to ask. It's not even like you'd burn the bridge, because that's what a lot of these reporters are worried about is, oh, next time the president or vice president goes to do an interview, they won't call me if I'm too hard on them, which hurts my career, which is stupid, but that's the reality. But that's not even hurting, that's not burning that bridge. You're just saying, you're going to save democracy, let us know how. That should be a pretty basic question.
Well, you'll never get an answer.
No, you won't. They'll probably say, well, Trump, January 6th, on and on and on.
Right.
Which is probably why they don't. No, they don't answer. They don't ask it because they don't care. That's why they don't ask
it.
Okay, so let's say that's two. Booming economy, save democracy. We still have to have a third one here, Roy.
Boy, Dawn is killing us here.
Yeah, well, that's why she sent it. She said, this would be good show material. And I was like, I can't argue. That is good show material. That's good stuff.
Well, I don't even like playing this game where we're taking their perspective on good, because absolutely nothing positive has come. Oh, you brought it up a while back that a potential positive for our side is that people are becoming more in tune or aware of the bad policy. But it's, boy, I don't even like to think from their perspective. I mean, because it is so fraught with deception and lies and manipulation that it saddens me.
I would have said in the past, yeah, but everybody, all politicians do that. I still say that, but the last few weeks I've heard clips of White House, I don't know what you call them, because it's not White House correspondents. Those are reporters. But they're White House surrogates who basically go out into the media and they just say stuff. And Republicans have these people, too. But the clips that are coming out of these White House surrogates, we've been playing them on Annie's show. They're amazing. They're things like that you'd look at Joe Biden and go, that's what people are seeing about him. I'm just going to take those same words and just say them about Trump. Like, verbatim, that guy has dementia.
Yep.
Trump has dementia. He can't put thoughts together. I don't know why people would vote for a president who clearly is losing his mind. Like, they're saying that stuff.
Yeah.
That's like communist manifesto manipulation.
Oh, just total projection.
Yes, all it is. Yes. The only third one that I could think of from their perspective is, so we got booming economy, we got saving democracy. The third one would be something like, I think it would probably be abortion or something about abortion, but the messaging's tough because the federal government doesn't have any real jurisdiction over it anymore. It's to the states, but it would be something about that. I don't really know what that would be.
Yeah, that's another one that they're kind of not really doing anything about it, but they're telling you how bad it will be.
Yeah,
without them. So they're sort of implying that they have a plan to save abortion, but they don't really.
Yeah, it's a weird moment because I thought going into this election, you were going to hear that constantly. And for a while you did, but they've kind of backed off of that message because I don't know if, A, it's really top of mind for voters and if they're forcing it, you know, people can see that. But also that it's abortion numbers are up since Roe versus Wade went away. So it's actually kind of backfired. I mean, the law should have never been. But it's like people went above and beyond and were like, now I'm really going to have more unprotected sex and get rid of fetuses because I can't. Like, it's like they're flexing their right to do it more because there's no reason why abortions would go up after Roe versus Wade, except for almost like people showing the man or whatever that is. I can't think of another reason. Maybe there is one.
Well, I would think it would be because what the overturning of Roe v. Wade was all about was give it back to the states. And there's enough liberal strongholds in some big states that they can swing the pendulum the complete other way now because if it's up to...
I always appreciate when people write into the show. Not everything that you send me makes it onto the show, but on occasion it can. Dawn sent this in, Roy, and it's almost like it says tough task of the day, which it is. List three positive things that Joe Biden or Kamala Harris have done. Can you list three? Let's not even say positive. Let's just say three things that they have accomplished legislatively.
Okay. So besides an amazing economy.
Yeah. Besides that.
And world peace.
Yep. You know, we do kind of have to put positive on it because you could just say, well, he's put a whole bunch of countries into war through no steady hand. He has opened up our border and he has spent $10 trillion. I mean, that you could say that.
Yeah.
Let's say positive. And you could here's a twist on it. Dawn, I don't know if you meant us to do this, but I'm taking the liberty here. The twist can be that it's positive even from their perspective, not from ours, but from their perspective. What do they say that they've done positively in the last 4 years?
Well, they just lie.
Yeah, but what do they say that they've done, though?
Well, they're saying that it's a great economy.
Okay.
And that they've added more jobs and that everything is awesome.
Ding, there's one.
Everything is awesome? That's one?
That's one. Economy is awesome. That they've added X amount of jobs because they compare it to like the COVID dip,
yeah,
which is wonderful.
And they're only counting government jobs. Or
and
public
yeah, that's
jobs.
Another one. And they're counting unemployment, which is not the way to count these things anymore. You count people who are not even looking for a job anymore, which unemployment doesn't count.
Right.
But okay, so let's say that's one. Let's say that they're saying booming economy. There's one.
Boy. Their biggest thing right now is that they're not Trump.
Yes, but that's not an achievement, is it? Can we say that?
Probably not.
Okay. I mean, yes, that's a fact. That is their message. We're not Trump. We'll save democracy, maybe?
That's they're the not message? Really telling us how they're going to save democracy. They're just saying that if we don't reelect them, then we'll lose democracy.
You have just said almost verbatim what Tyrus said.
Uh-oh.
Tyrus said, whenever that he goes, I wish I were in the room when they would say any of these things, whether I'm interviewing them, I'm in the press pool, whatever, where they say, we will save democracy. He goes, I would just say, how? Or Trump will ruin democracy. I would ask, how? Nobody is asking that question when they say those things. And they do interviews and say these things in interviews, and nobody is, and that's a simple question. Super, super easy to ask. It's not even like you'd burn the bridge, because that's what a lot of these reporters are worried about is, oh, next time the president or vice president goes to do an interview, they won't call me if I'm too hard on them, which hurts my career, which is stupid, but that's the reality. But that's not even hurting, that's not burning that bridge. You're just saying, you're going to save democracy, let us know how. That should be a pretty basic question.
Well, you'll never get an answer.
No, you won't. They'll probably say, well, Trump, January 6th, on and on and on.
Right.
Which is probably why they don't. No, they don't answer. They don't ask it because they don't care. That's why they don't ask
it.
Okay, so let's say that's two. Booming economy, save democracy. We still have to have a third one here, Roy.
Boy, Dawn is killing us here.
Yeah, well, that's why she sent it. She said, this would be good show material. And I was like, I can't argue. That is good show material. That's good stuff.
Well, I don't even like playing this game where we're taking their perspective on good, because absolutely nothing positive has come. Oh, you brought it up a while back that a potential positive for our side is that people are becoming more in tune or aware of the bad policy. But it's, boy, I don't even like to think from their perspective. I mean, because it is so fraught with deception and lies and manipulation that it saddens me.
I would have said in the past, yeah, but everybody, all politicians do that. I still say that, but the last few weeks I've heard clips of White House, I don't know what you call them, because it's not White House correspondents, those are reporters, but they're White House surrogates who basically go out into the media and they just say stuff. And Republicans have these people too. But the clips that are coming out of these White House surrogates, we've been playing them on Annie's show. They're amazing. They're things like that you'd look at Joe Biden and go, that's what people are seeing about him. I'm just going to take those same words and just say them about Trump. Like verbatim, that guy has dementia.
Yep.
Trump has dementia. He can't put thoughts together. I don't know why people would vote for a president who clearly is losing his mind. Like, they're saying that stuff.
Yeah.
That's like communist manifesto manipulation.
Oh, just total projection.
Yes,
all it is.
Yes. The only third one that I could think of from their perspective is, so we got booming economy, we got saving democracy. The third one would be something like, I think it would probably be abortion or something about abortion, but the messaging's tough because the federal government doesn't have any real jurisdiction over it anymore. It's to the states, but it would be something about that. I don't really know what that would be.
Yeah, that's another one that they're kind of not really doing anything about it, but they're telling you how bad it will be without them. So they're sort of implying that they have a plan to save abortion, but they don't really.
Yeah, it's a weird moment because I thought going into this election, you were going to hear that constantly. And for a while you did, but they've kind of backed off of that message because I don't know if, A, it's really top of mind for voters and if they're forcing it, you know, people can see that. But also that it's abortion numbers are up since Roe versus Wade went away. So it's actually kind of backfired. I mean, the law should have never been. But it's like people went above and beyond and were like, now I'm really going to have more unprotected sex and get rid of fetuses because I can't. Like, it's like they're flexing their right to do it more because there's no reason why abortions would go up after Roe versus Wade, except for almost like people showing the man or whatever that is. I can't think of another reason. Maybe there is one.
Well, I would think it would be because what the overturning of Roe v. Wade was all about was give it back to the states. And there's enough liberal strongholds in some big states that they can swing the pendulum the complete other way now. Because if it's up to the state, then we're going to say
more like loosen the restrictions on abortion.
So
maybe so.
You might have certain strongholds within California and New York, and
it's Illinois, man,
and Illinois and Michigan and places like that, where they're going to say, okay, well, you give it back to us. We're going to, if you're a democratically controlled state legislature, you're going to say, okay, all the rules are gone. You can do whatever you want.
That's a good point. I didn't really think about it that way. Do you know where the abortion capital of the nation is now?
Are you going to say Illinois?
It's Southern Illinois.
Oh, geez.
I think it's Carbondale because it's surrounded by conservative states, whereas a lot of those blue states aren't.
Yeah.
You know, they have more blue states around them. Illinois doesn't. And the bottom tip of Illinois especially is surrounded by more conservative states than anywhere else. So they've made Carbondale into like an abortion mecca.
So everybody's coming from out of state.
Yes.
How
sick is that?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, there's a great note to end on. Well, this segment anyway. We got one more. We'll be right back. Yeah. Well, we'll end the show with a streaming recommendation, as we like to do. Although this isn't quite... I'll get to a streaming recommendation. I went on Father's Day, Sunday, and saw a movie in the movie theater. We had to try to figure out last time we did it. It was probably 2 years ago. And then before that, maybe 5 years. So I think within the last decade, I've been in a movie theater maybe 3 or 4 times. And I just couldn't believe how much I enjoyed it. I think it helped that the movie was pretty good. Now, I didn't love the ending of this movie, but it was still an enjoyable process. And if you're like me anymore, if you turn something on and it keeps your interest, that's good enough. I mean, I'm to the point now where I don't even hardly criticize the endings of movies because I don't get to the endings often enough. And I used to be the guy that would watch everything all the way through just because. And I really don't do it anymore. Went to the movie theater thinking I was seeing an M. Night Shyamalan movie for Father's Day with my wife. It was kind of a date night we got. I was not seeing an M. Night Shyamalan movie, although he did produce the movie. His daughter, I think it was his daughter, directed the movie. I mean, in name, and I remember reading that. Now that I'm saying it, I'm like, I should have checked. I think it's his daughter. Last name is the same, Shyamalan. And it was good. It was called The Watchers. Now, if you are like me, when you hear The Watchers, you think of the Book of Enoch, you think of some biblical reference stuff. I mean, it's kind of extra-biblical, but it has to do with Nephilim, it has to do with demons impregnating women and stuff like that. This movie does not really have to do with that. Now, very loosely, I won't give away anything, it kind of does. But, I mean, very, very loosely did it have anything to do with the sort of extra-biblical narrative around The Watchers. But it was a good movie. It's very Shyamalan. It's very mysterious. You don't know what's happening. I'll give you the rough plot of the movie. A girl kind of stumbles into a forest. She's driving, and it's in Ireland, so you know it's very rural outside of Dublin. That's the actual way Ireland is. And she's driving through a forest to make a delivery, And she gets stuck in this forest. And so she gets out of the car because she sees a sign and she walks up to the sign. Well, then once she sees the sign, then in the distance, she sees a person and she kind of gets lost and she ends up following this person into a little, almost not quite a cabin. It's more like high tech than that, where one wall is entirely glass, and at dark, the glass becomes a mirror, so you can't see out of it. And they have to stand in front of that mirror at dark and let these creatures just watch them. And so that's why the movie is called The Watchers. Now, of course, because it's a mystery, you don't know whether the people in the cabin, the high-tech cabin, are telling her the truth, or whether they have believed, you don't know how they know all of these things. So the journey is the process of her trying to figure out, can I trust these people? Are these creatures real, or are they made up? It reminded me a lot of M. Night Shyamalan's The Village, but ultimately a very different movie. Just similar kind of schematics, similar scenes. So I highly recommend The Watchers, and I'm very glad that there's more Shyamalan movies coming out, because M. Night Shyamalan stuff is fantastic. He is the modern day Rod Serling, in my opinion. I really wanted Jordan Peele to be that too, but he's I don't know, the last couple from him, I was like, I want to like it, but you're not quite making me believe that you're taking me down the right road here. So that's the recommendation. Another Shyamalan movie, M. Night Shyamalan, is directing a movie called Trap, and that's coming out like within the next month. These are all theatrical releases, so I'm not giving you streaming recommendations here, and I apologize for that. But Trap is with Josh Hartnett, and it looks, and I can't tell exactly from the trailer, but it looks as if he and his daughter go to a concert, and then he realizes, man, there's all kinds of police presence here. What's going on? And he asks one of the like vendors who's just selling T-shirts, hey, why are there so many police here? And the vendor goes, hey, well, you know the midnight killer or whatever, some famous killer. Well, police have been tipped off that he's going to be here tonight, and so they're setting a trap for him. Well, what you get from the trailer is that you think Josh Hartnett might be the killer and that he's got to try to get out of the trap. But I don't know for sure, but it's M. Night Shyamalan, so it'll be pretty good. Streaming recommendation, though? Okay, I'll give you one. Saw a preview in the Watchers for A Quiet Place Day One is what it's called. A Quiet Place prequel, which I'm really excited about because A Quiet Place was really good. The second Quiet Place was also good, although not quite as good as the first one. And part of that, I think, is because of COVID. Like, the kids had aged dramatically because they had to stop shooting in the middle of shooting the second one. It was kind of funky, but it was still good. But here's the problem. Now, if you ever watch post-apocalyptic stuff, and I do my Last Man on Earth movies. In fact, let's just play the sounder and say this is going to be it.
The last.
Where is everybody?
The last.
It's not the end of the world.
It's all the time I need and all the time I want.
The last person on Earth.
I miss the noise, you know?
I thought I was going to be alone again.
There's time now.
Yeah, Last Man on Earth movies, Last Person on Earth movies, are any scene that involves a person who thinks they're the last person on Earth or an Earth-like planet or place, or they're in an empty city, you know, a place that should be heavily populated but isn't. So anything that involves those scenes, this one looks like it will have that. A Quiet Place 1 and 2 were good. A Quiet Place prequel looks like it could be even better, because if you ever watch post-apocalyptic stuff with zombies and whatever, no matter what, let's take Walking Dead, for instance, or 28 Days Later. I mean, the premises of both of those are very similar, where a person goes into a hospital and goes into a coma. They wake back up and the apocalypse has happened. Zombie apocalypse has happened, and they are waking up into it just like you are. Super cool idea, way to open a story. But the problem is you miss the apocalypse. And that's because apocalypses are expensive to shoot. They're very, very expensive because you got to have big scenes, lots of cities, lots of people everywhere, lots of graphics, lots of CGI. If you skip it, you don't have to do any of that. You just throw the character in the middle of it. And that's what a lot of stories do. In fact, Fear the Walking Dead did the same thing. I thought we were going to get an origin story. And in fact, they just blocked off. They just like drew a wall around their city. And then it happened outside of it. So you still didn't see it. This one should be a very high budget film where you see the aliens that thrive on sound, which is what makes those movies fun. You see them take over the world. So I'm recommending the movie even before I've seen it, just based on what I know about budgets and what I know about the genre. Thank you very much for listening. This is Wiggins America. You can always podcast it by typing in Wiggins America, and it'll come up in lots of different spots.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Well, we'll end the show with a streaming recommendation, as we like to do. Although this isn't quite... I'll get to a streaming recommendation. I went on Father's Day, Sunday, and saw a movie in the movie theater. We had to try to figure out last time we did it. It was probably 2 years ago, and then before that, maybe 5 years. So I think within the last decade, I've been in a movie theater maybe three or four times. And I just couldn't believe how much I enjoyed it. I think it helped that the movie was pretty good. Now, I didn't love the ending of this movie, but it was still an enjoyable process. And if you're like me, anymore, if you turn something on and it keeps your interest, that's good enough. I mean, I'm to the point now where I don't even hardly criticize the endings of movies because I don't get to the endings often enough. And I used to be the guy that would watch everything all the way through just because. And I really don't do it anymore. Went to the movie theater thinking I was seeing an M. Night Shyamalan movie for Father's Day with my wife. It was kind of a date night we got. I was not seeing an M. Night Shyamalan movie, although he did produce the movie. His daughter, I think it was his daughter, directed the movie. I mean, in name, and I remember reading that. Now that I'm saying it, I'm like, I should have checked. I think it's his daughter. Last name is the same, Shyamalan. And it was good. It was called The Watchers. Now, if you are like me, when you hear The Watchers, you think of the Book of Enoch, you think of some biblical reference stuff. I mean, it's kind of extra biblical, but it has to do with Nephilim, it has to do with demons impregnating women and stuff like that. This movie does not really have to do with that. Now, very loosely, I won't give away anything, it kind of does. But, I mean, very, very loosely did it have anything to do with the sort of extra biblical narrative around The Watchers. But it was a good movie. It's very Shyamalan. It's very mysterious. You don't know what's happening. I'll give you the rough plot of the movie. A girl kind of stumbles into a forest. She's driving, and it's in Ireland. So, you know, it's very rural outside of Dublin. That's the actual way Ireland is. And she's driving through a forest to make a delivery. And she gets stuck in this forest, and so she gets out of the car because she sees a sign, and she walks up to the sign. Well, then once she sees the sign, then in the distance she sees a person, and she kind of gets lost, and she ends up following this person into a little, almost not quite a cabin, it's more like high tech than that, where one wall is entirely glass, and at dark, the glass becomes a mirror so you can't see out of it. And they have to stand in front of that mirror at dark and let these creatures just watch them. And so that's why the movie is called The Watchers. Now, of course, because it's a mystery, you don't know whether the people in the cabin, the high-tech cabin, are telling her the truth or whether they have believed, or you know, you don't know how they know all of these things. So the journey is the process of her trying to figure out, can I trust these people? Are these creatures real or are they made up? It reminded me a lot of M. Night Shyamalan's The Village, but ultimately a very different movie. Just similar kind of schematics, similar scenes. So, I highly recommend The Watchers, and I'm very glad that there's more Shyamalan movies coming out, because M. Night Shyamalan stuff is fantastic. He is the modern-day Rod Serling, in my opinion. I really wanted Jordan Peele to be that, too, but He's I don't know. The last couple from him, I was like, I want to like it, but you're not quite making me believe that you're taking me down the right road here. So that's the recommendation. Another Shyamalan movie, M. Night Shyamalan, is directing a movie called Trap, and that's coming out like within the next month. These are all theatrical releases, though. So I'm not giving you streaming recommendations here, and I apologize for that. But Trap is with Josh Hartnett, and it looks, and I can't tell exactly from the trailer, but it looks as if he and his daughter go to a concert, and then he realizes, man, there's all kinds of police presence here. What's going on? And he asks one of the like vendors who's just selling T-shirts, hey, why are there so many police here? And the vendor goes, hey, well, you know the Midnight Killer or whatever, some famous killer. Well, police have been tipped off that he's going to be here tonight, and so they're setting a trap for him. Well, what you get from the trailer is that you think Josh Hartnett might be the killer and that he's got to try to get out of the trap. But I don't know for sure, but it's M. Night Shyamalan, so it'll be pretty good. Streaming recommendation, though? Okay, I'll give you one. Saw a preview in the Watchers for the A Quiet Place Day One is what it's called. A Quiet Place prequel, which I'm really excited about because A Quiet Place was really good. The second Quiet Place was also good, although not quite as good as the first one. And part of that, I think, is because of COVID. Like, the kids had aged dramatically because they had to stop shooting in the middle of shooting the second one. It was kind of funky, but it was still good. But here's the problem. If you ever watch post-apocalyptic stuff, and I do my Last Man on Earth movies. In fact, let's just play the sounder and say this is going to be it.
The last.
Where is everybody?
The last.
It's not the end of the world.
It's all the time I need and all the time I want.
The last person on Earth.
I miss the noise, you know?
I thought I was going to be alone again.
There's time now.
Yeah, Last Man on Earth movies, Last Person on Earth movies, are any scene that involves a person who thinks they're the last person on Earth or an Earth-like planet or place, or they're in an empty city, you know, a place that should be heavily populated but isn't. So anything that involves those scenes, this one looks like it will have that. A Quiet Place 1 and 2 were good. A Quiet Place prequel looks like it could be even better because if you ever watch post-apocalyptic stuff with zombies and whatever, no matter what, let's take Walking Dead, for instance, or 28 Days Later. I mean, the premises of both of those are very similar, where a person goes into a hospital and goes into a coma. They wake back up and the apocalypse has happened. Zombie apocalypse has happened and they are waking up into it just like you are. Super cool idea, way to open a story. But the problem is you miss the apocalypse. And that's because apocalypses are expensive to shoot. They're very, very expensive because you got to have big scenes, lots of cities, lots of people everywhere, lots of graphics, lots of CGI. If you skip it, you don't have to do any of that. You just throw the character in the middle of it. And that's what a lot of stories do. In fact, Fear the Walking Dead did the same thing. I thought we were going to get an origin story. And in fact, they just blocked off. They just like drew a wall around their city. And then it happened outside of it. So you still didn't see it. This one should be a very high budget film where you see the aliens that thrive on sound, which is what makes those movies fun. You see them take over the world. So I'm recommending the movie even before I've seen it, just based on what I know about budgets and what I know about the genre. Thank you very much for listening. This is Wiggins America. You can always podcast it by typing in Wiggins America, and it'll come up in lots of different spots.
Get more at 971talk.com.